Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
What's up, nerds? This is Just a Couple Arslings, a Last Kingdom podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jessica Toomer.
And I'm Alyssa Fixie. We are writers for Sci-Fi Wire's Fangirls who started recapping The Last Kingdom in Season 3, so we decided to bring that nerdy, horny energy to Podcastlandia. Jessica, how are you on this lovely Wednesday morning?
I'm doing good. I'm, surprisingly, I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm pretty okay. I didn't sleep a lot last night because I was an idiot and I made coffee at 5 o'clock yesterday because there's no rules in quarantine. So, you know, we're running on a little bit of less sleep, but I never claim to be a role model. So we just do what we can.
Dude, I've been going to bed so early lately.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah. I'm going to bed at my grandmother's time, which is 8 o'clock. Sometimes because I just get tired. And so I'm whatever, you know?
Well, see,
yeah,
I'm
but then
tired.
I wake up at midnight.
Right. I'm tired all day, except when I try to go to sleep. And then it's actually, you're going to lie in bed and think about everything for 3 hours before you actually go to sleep. So
of being course, able to that's science, that's right. How your brain works.
Exactly. So
can't fight it.
Being able to focus on Uhtred and his problems helps me forget about my own, and I find that very comforting.
Yeah, what we're really saying, guys, is that lack of sleep might make this podcast, weirder than it already is, so just prepare yourself.
Well, should we get to it for episode two?
Yeah, such a good segue. Again, we're really killing it with those, so let's go ahead.
Yeah. So we open on these ships. Uhtred and crew are heading off to Bebbanburg. And, you know, they're doing okay, but Uhtred and young Uhtred really are button heads in a huge way. Uhtred's doing some sort of blood rite into the sea to sort of, you know, bless their boat. And young Uhtred is you're a dumbass. Why are you doing this? And there's a real lack of respect on both sides, I think. Young Uhtred thinks his dad's an idiot, and Uhtred is my son is a pious blowhard. Where did I go wrong? And it's pretty great. It's pretty great.
Yeah, I really like the back and forth between these two.
Me too. I thought
it would annoy me just because, you know, Uhtred Jr. he's this young kid. He doesn't know anything. Uhtred's been through a lot and sacrificed a lot for him. And so I thought it would make me, really just not like this kid. But I think he, presents a really interesting kind of challenge for Uhtred.
Sure.
To, look at his life and how he's lived it and to kind of think, is that how he wants to continue living it? And, I mean, he's not wrong about some things.
Sure.
I'm not going to cut my arm and sacrifice to the water gods. I'm going to take a Dramamine and, hope this boat ride, gets over very quickly.
Right.
So there are some things where Uhtred Jr. is, he's not wrong. And so they have a really interesting conversation on the boat about Uhtred Jr.'s kind of accepted, I know you're going to do what you're going to do, but please show mercy. And, you know, they talk about forgiveness and Uhtred kind of throws it back at him. And he's why don't you use that forgiveness to forgive me?
Mm.
And it's just it's a surprisingly kind of sweet conversation between them because you can see that they both, there's obviously love there and there's feelings there, but they just are so in their own bullshit right now and they can't get out of it. So, yeah, there's going to be tension all season, I think.
Yeah, I think young Uhtred's really going to keep his dad on his toes. And Uhtred, honestly, he needs somebody like that. He needs people in his life to be hey, buddy, I understand that, you're smart, you know what you're doing, but also maybe consider things a different way, because Uhtred isn't always the best at that. So, but yeah, I think it's going to be...
Oh, what, at self-reflection?
So, yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see that relationship sort of develop over the season. But yeah, as they're, you know, sailing off to Bebbanburg, like, Edward is dealing with shit back in Wessex because Æthelred is, you know, trying to assert himself as King of Mercia all the time. And yeah, and Edward, you know, he's a young king. We don't know exactly how long he's been king at this point, but he's still extremely young. And he doesn't love to listen to a lot of different opinions. So he basically just leans on his father-in-law. And really cuts out, especially he cuts out the women in his life, Æthelflaed, who is, you know, Queen of Mercia, and you think that he would want her opinion on her own people, and Aelswith, who is also from Mercia, you know, they both sort of offer him their opinions on the situation, and he really just does not care. He also doesn't seem to really care that much about his wife and son. I don't know, there was just a really, like, dismissive mood to him in this whole scene where we kind of see his family. I thought it was really interesting. I mean, you know, this is his second wife. He loved his first wife, and this is, you know, not his first child. And so I think Edward has kind of decided, you know, I have to do this to be the king, but, like, I don't care about my second family.
Yeah, I think, like, when, you know, when we kind of picked this up last season, he was like, you know what? Okay, I have to do it. I'm going to make the best of it. They, him and his current wife, the queen, or soon to be queen, kind of bonded over that they were both kind of forced into this. And you thought, okay, well, maybe this can, like, turn out to be something good. But I think now that he's lived it for a while, he's starting to realize, like, or he's already realized, like, this is not going to be what I had before.
Right.
And it sucks that he did have, like, a really, you know, a strong, like, relationship.
It was a love
before,
match.
And he had a family. And so I think that kind of weighs on him too. It's like, I had this and then I had to give it up. Like, that's going to cause some bitterness, you know, with your new wife. And, I don't know. I feel like in a way he kind of takes it out on his mother because
definitely
she's the one who made the match. And so, and you see him, you know, bonding with Æthelhelm and, like, really taking his advice to heart. And so it makes me think that he does blame his mother. And it's sad because she has a lot of wisdom to offer, especially in this whole kind of Mercia dealing with the bones of St. Oswald. Like, she knows what that means because she is from Mercia.
Right.
And she could have really good insight into Æthelred's way of thinking and what his next step might be, even more so than, like, Æthelflaed. And yet, like, she's got to sit in her damn chair and not say anything.
Yeah.
And he, it's kind of sad. I feel for her.
Yeah, he doesn't seek her counsel. He doesn't even really let her get to know her grandson that much. Like, she was extremely shut out by Æthelhelm.
Straight to the heart.
Yeah, she was like, hey, buddy, let's go read some books. And the father-in-law is like, actually, our grandson is going to be a jock, not a nerd, so you can just go and sit in your corner. I never thought that I would really feel for Aelswith, but I'm feeling a bit of pity for her. This
quarantine's got a soft, to
right.
be honest.
That's,
I mean,
true.
Because I do feel for her. But then she has this kind of interaction with Father Peerlig, and she's like, you know, where's Beoka? I want to apologize, blah, blah, blah. I don't think she really wants to apologize. I think she wants to use him
100%.
To kind of scheme and influence Edward in some way. And Pierre, like, tells her, like, he's gone. He peaced out. That's what
you
wanted.
You told,
you know,
him to leave.
Like, yes. And she's like, you know, all of our allies are leaving us. What cowards. They were never, like, true to us. And I'm just like, get out of here, Karen. Like, you told him to go. You basically threatened his life. Like, he's not going to stick around for you. You never liked him.
Right.
So, yeah, there's sides to Aelswith. Like, at one, you know, one moment you could feel bad for her, and the next you're like, back on her bullshit. I don't know why I ever thought, like, she would change. She's got some interesting arcs this season, I think.
Yeah, she's a really complex character, a really multifaceted character, and I like that about her. Like, even when I, like, hate the character, she's one of my favorites to watch because there's so much going on there, and, you know, I don't need all my female characters to be good guys or unambiguously good guys. Like, you know, show me some emotional
death.
Assholes.
That's
I love it. she's feeling super powerless right now. And you know, in some ways she brought that on herself, and in others, it's kind of not fair.
Speaking of unfair, Aelfrich thinks it's super unfair that he's got to sell this fake heart of a saint.
Right.
Like, it's obviously not the real heart. Mm-hmm. But there's something about, it's so interesting to me how this show, like, addresses Christianity and the religion and what you thought of it back then, because it is so much like paganism, like,
yeah,
with this whole, like, hunting of the bones. And Aelfrich is really concerned that if he gives this up, you know, he's basically giving up his seat in Bebbanburg. Like, he thinks that because he has honored St. Oswald and because he's been so pious, that's why he is where he is.
Yeah.
He's not in a really good position right now, so I don't know, like, why that matters to him so much. But he's kind of, you know, not about selling this heart, even though he desperately needs the men and they don't have enough silver to buy it. And so things are looking really good for Uhtred. And we're like, yes, like, you know, maybe we're actually going to take back Bebbanburg.
Yeah.
But you got to get north first. And apparently the north is, like, not, like, friendly. And
it's a rough
doesn't
place.
Like strangers.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have guessed?
Right. Yeah. They head to this northern town. I believe it was called Grimsby. And they're basically looking for the monks that are trying to get into Bebbanburg. And so Uhtred tells young Uhtred, he's like, all right, so what you're going to do is you're going to get in with these monks and you're going to follow them in and you're going to open the sea gate and let us into Bebbanburg. And so, but first they have to find the monks. And it's, you know,
where are they?
In the whorehouse. You know, before we get to that, I really loved the scene between Bayoka and young Uhtred, where he basically tells him, listen, like, I know your dad can seem rough, but this is his history. This is what happened to him. This is why he is the way that he is. And I think young Uhtred doesn't quite take that conversation the way Bayoka intended him to. He basically is like, all right, great. So I can save my dad's soul. So this is how I'm going to do it. And Bayoka's like, listen, man, I've been trying to get this guy to love Jesus for like 30 years and it's just not going to take. But, like, you know, you can try.
Go for it.
But don't put too many
how
eggs.
How pissed would you be if you were Bayoka and, like, this young kid finally got Uhtred to, like, be baptized and really accept Christianity?
Yeah.
Like, I'd just be, like, done.
Yeah.
I'd throw off my habit and just, like, walk into the sea. I don't know. I really enjoyed the conversation, too. It just, it makes me, he looks so weary. Like, he looks so tired. And I don't want to see him looking like that because I just feel like, you know, that's not a good sign. Get him, like, a 5-hour energy shot and, like, my anxiety about Bayoka's, like, lifespan.
I think losing Tira and losing Alfred and sort of his sense of family and his sense of purpose took a lot out of him. You can definitely tell that he is more of a burdened man than he has been in the past. And that's pretty heartbreaking to see. While they hang out at the boat, the Kokum crew decides to visit the local whorehouse. And, you know, it's uncomfortable. You find some monks engaging in some, you know, S&M. It's great. I
have a question about this, though.
Yeah. I don't know an answer, but ask the question.
Listen, you're supposed to have all the answers. there's this, like, little scene where Uhtred and Osfoth are like, you know, you're going to pretend to be the virgin because no one would believe I'm the virgin.
I loved that. That was good.
It was great. But then I was like, wait, has Osfoth gotten it on with someone? Has he been in a relationship? Because, like, that's a romance I would like to see.
I mean, I probably wouldn't. I mean, probably not a relationship because, you know, they've got stuff to do and cook them. But, like, you know, the baby
they've
monk's
got
been
raiding
running,
and pillaging.
Right. The baby monk's been running with the Viking boy band for a while now. So there's going to be women. And so, yeah, I think, you know, I think it's safe to say that Osworth has...
He's experienced.
Right. I don't know if I'd say experienced, but he's had experience.
It's happened once.
But yeah, I think good for him. Yeah, good for him. You know, life's hard. Might as well have a good time once in a while.
Do what you have to do.
Right.
You've got to, like, wear that haircut for, like, the rest of your life.
Why does he still have that haircut? Why? You don't have to have the bowl cut anymore, young man.
You just want to torture us.
Bless. But yeah, so they find the monks engaging in some extremely hypocritical behavior. And, you know, they send young Uhtred on his way. I'm honestly
I'm surprised that Uhtred Jr. is playing, like, such a big part in this plan. I mean,
Me too.
Is, like, the linchpin. Like, he doesn't get into the fortress and open the gate and send a signal, then, like, it's all screwed.
It's a lot of pressure on a very young boy and a very tenuous relationship. So Uhtred is really showing.
You just met him.
Yeah. Uhtred's really putting a lot of faith in his son. And I think that makes a difference, though. Like, you know, the fact that young Uhtred sees that his dad has this faith in him, even if it may be misplaced, who knows? I think the fact that he has that faith in him made him want to do the job. You know what I mean?
Like,
it was a sort of symbiotic decision. Because he has faith in him, he's going to prove that he should have faith in him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know if Uhtred thought of it like that deeply.
Well,
but I think
you know.
You're right. I think there's a bond beginning to form, and to give him that level of responsibility speaks a lot about, you know, how Uhtred sees him. And so, yeah, it's a nice little moment of like, okay, well, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to kill anyone, but I'm going to do it for you.
Because I know that the spirit of our family is within you. That will give you a strength that you do not know yet.
I will try and do as you need, but I will not kill a man.
And so we leave off there, and we kind of head to the Mercia side of things. I feel like there's two sides of the Last Kingdom right now, which is Uhtred and his Bebbanburg stuff, and then we've got all of the shit in Mercia. And there's a lot of it.
There's a lot of it.
Ethelred is the worst, as always, and he is not handling Edith's, like, kind of teasing very well gets to the point where he's like, you know what? I'll just kill my wife.
Right.
And you can be queen. And she's like, okay, wait. What?
This is not what I signed up for. I have enjoyed Edith as a character. I think it's really interesting. I think she's, you know, seeing her have to use her position very carefully to sort of stay in Ethelred's favor while also not doing things that make her feel too gross that she can't sleep at night. I think hearing him say, all right, well, I'll become a widower so I can marry you and then we can hook up. I think that was a really scary moment for her. And I think she knows who Ethelred is and doesn't like it, but she's sort of in this position where she has to play nice with him. But I think she has a lot more caution about him than her brother does. Like, Erdwulf shows up and is like, hey, man, have you guys hooked up yet? She's like, no, he wants to kill his wife for me. And her brother is like, this is great. Let's do that. And she's like, yikes, these men are terrible. And I think she's in a really tough spot.
It's also stupid to think that, and she's not stupid.
I mean, clearly she's
the smarter sibling.
For sure.
She knows that if he's so willing to kill his current wife, who their marriage united kingdoms, and there's a lot going on there politically.
Sure.
If he's willing to, like, off her and risk all of that, then whenever he finally gets Edith and they're, like, hooking up and stuff, when he gets bored of her, it's going to be nothing for him to, like, get rid of her.
Right.
So Edith, like, is playing the long game, and her brother is just kind of, like, he's got tunnel vision of where he's like, okay, I want one thing. I want our family name to be restored. All I have to do is lead his armies, and then he's going to forgive, like, our father's past indiscretions, and then everything will be good. And Edith knows that that's not the case. Like, she sees how kind of tenuous Ethelred's, like, reign is, and knows that if, you know, things fall apart for him, like, everything that they do for him is just going to be in vain. And she's trying the best she can. She's surrounded by fools. They're dangerous fools, though. And
yeah.
I feel for her. I hope she makes it out because I think we need more like interesting female characters for sure.
Yeah. And I think a lot of, well, probably every woman on the show right now is in a very complex situation. Like we kind of, after we see what's going on in Mercia, it cuts to Breida and Canute. And, you know, she's Canute's woman now and all this stuff. But Heston reminds Canute, he's like, hey, I know the truth that you had Ragnar killed. Breida will always love Ragnar more than you. So if she finds out about that, that could be extremely bad for you. And so I think this lack of knowledge on Breida's part, I think that's just like a ticking time bomb. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think she'll be quite as willing to go along with Canute if she knows that he was behind Ragnar's death.
For sure. And I mean, things are going well right now for them. They've invaded Mercia. Mm-hmm. They wanted to kill Ethelred. They assumed that he would be there. He's not because he thought, oh, the Danes have gone. I'm going to start pillaging and like taking over East Anglia. And but it's still a huge victory to get Ethelred's like seat, like his seat of power, and to be able to kind of make fools of his lords and the eldermen and everything. But it's, I think the like most interesting thing, again, I don't like Heston, but I think the most interesting thing about Heston is he's so good at reading people. Like he's very shrewd. And so he has that conversation with Canute and he knows when to kind of like let off the gas about the whole Ragnar thing. But then he goes straight to Breida and he starts like picking away at her like relationship with Canute and her trust and what she thinks it is. And so, you know, he kind of makes a comment. It's so pervy, but he makes a comment about like, I've noticed your body's been changing, which like, bro, no,
yikes.
Don't notice anything about my body.
She's going to stab him. Like, don't talk about that.
Yeah, for real. You don't say that to any woman, but definitely not Breida.
Right.
And so like, I guess she's pregnant. I mean, it makes sense because, you know, the curse was lifted last season.
Right.
And she's been hooking up with Canute. It's interesting because she's like, you do not tell him. Like, this is a secret she's keeping from him because she's kind of thought about it, too. Like, maybe I am. But I think for her, like, you know, this whole conquering England thing is much more important than a baby at this point. And so it's just like these little secrets that they have from each other that I think they're going to come to light. And I think it's going to really kind of destroy this alliance that they have.
Yeah, I think secret children can really make things complicated, which is what we see in Bebbanburg, too. Like Aelfrich's son, Widgar, who everybody thought drowned at sea, returns. And he brings with him a band of mercenaries to help his father, which honestly really tips the scales in Bebbanburg's favor now. You know, that's a very different situation than Uhtred's spies discovered. And so now it feels like Uhtred and his men are sailing into a trap. And it's not even a trap that Aelfrich intentionally set, but it sounds like
he just got lucky.
He just got lucky, which kills me. Like the man has no like, you know, planning skills, but he just got lucky.
Well, and he got, I mean, extremely lucky because his son comes back. I mean, he looks like some like second rate Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yes.
Kid.
Living in the desert.
He's like, you know, yeah, I've gone to all the corners of the world and I've collected warriors. Like, who the hell are you?
But you have
and
heard of me, you know.
Yeah. And he's like, Dad, I'm back, even though you banished me and that might have led to my death, except I survived. It's just like, it's almost like too good to be true.
Yeah.
And this kid is Aelfrich's son. I can't wholly trust that he's there, like, with good intentions. But it does, no matter what, it throws a wrench in Uhtred's plan. And not only does he bring men, but he also brings the kind of surety that Aelfrich's line has continued. And so here's another contender for, you know, Bebbanburg's seat, and he's an heir. And so it's like, now we're starting to really kind of erect some roadblocks for Uhtred to getting Bebbanburg, and he has no idea about it, so it's so scary.
Yeah.
I'm worried, very worried.
Should be worried. It's a lot. Yeah, and...
Oh, is it? You're supposed to, like, comfort me.
I know, but I have no comfort to give.
It's gonna be okay.
I'm worried, too. It's gonna be bad. So, like, everybody's kind of dealing with kids they didn't plan on right now. So, like, Aelswyth goes to visit Edward's first wife because she's super mad that Edward's current wife is going to become queen. So she goes and meets... Edwin, like, she talks to Hild and is like, hey, tell me about this other family, because I'm clearly not going to get in with this one. So maybe I can, you know, be somebody else's grandma. And so she talks to Hild, and Hild, you know, gives her the 411 on Edwin and basically says, listen, like, ever since everything went down with Edward, she's miserable. She doesn't get to see her children. She occasionally sees their daughter, but not very often. She hasn't seen her son since he was taken away. And she's living in this convent, and she's pretty miserable. And I think, in a way, Aelswyth feels some remorse, and she, you know, she can't make things better because of what she did. But I think she wants to make amends in a small way, so she lets Edwin see her son, little Athelstan, who is historically extremely important. Like, Edward's reign does not go great. Spoiler alert to things that happened, you know, 1500 years ago. But
yes, get in the history of it, Alyssa.
Yeah.
So, like, historian.
Yeah. So, like, Athelstan eventually becomes, like, the king of, like, the first king of a united England. So he really is, like, Alfred's true successor in the scheme of history. So he's extremely important. And Aelswyth, you know, she sort of meets him, and he's a very, like, studious little boy. So I could tell she could see, like, shades of Alfred in him. And she allows his mother to meet with him briefly. And, yeah, that was, like, it was a really, like, emotional moment. Like, Edwin doesn't know Aelswyth. Like, she knows of her, and she knows that Aelswyth basically ruined her life. But she doesn't recognize this woman who let her meet with her son as Aelswyth.
Right.
And yeah, Aelswyth is basically like, all right, we're going to keep him safe because, you know, he will be important, but you can't visit him again.
It's so sad. Yeah. It's like, even when she does something nice, she ends it with, like, kind of a twist of the knife, you know? And I get it, because to keep this kid safe, I mean, obviously, you know, Ethelhelm would, like, kill him at
for
a moment's
sure.
notice.
For sure.
And to keep him safe, you know, you have to cut all of his ties to Edward so that no one suspects that this is, you know, his son, his firstborn son. And so I get it. I just, does she have to tell her? I mean, I would have just let her go and be like, yes, and, you know, maybe again you can see him or something. And just know that you're lying.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Soften
I just,
the blow with a lie.
A little white lie.
Ooh.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was interested. I thought at first, you know, Aelswyth's plan, her plan might be to reunite Edward with Edwin, because they had a great love, and he's unhappy with his current wife, and, you know, maybe that would drive a wedge between him and Ethelhelm, you know, if he was hooking up with someone else.
Yeah.
But I think Aelswyth is thinking more long term, and she sees, like, the influence that Ethelhelm has on Edward's son now, and so she sees Athelstan as someone, as a boy she can raise, and maybe he'll be king one day. You know what I mean? I think she's playing this very smart and, you know, thinking past her rivalry with, you know, Edward's father-in-law right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, good for her. I think, you know, that's the right move. If she can keep this kid alive, like, that might be her best chance to kind of get back in power.
Yeah, yeah. She basically tells Edwin, you know, get over it. It would never have worked out between you two anyway, but also I'll take care of your son. But I don't think she ever, I don't think Edwin ever picks up that she is actually Aelswyth. Like, I didn't get that impression.
No.
But yeah, like, it's, I think it's smart of Ale Swith to sort of have these contingency plans, because Edward, when he finds out that, you know, Canute is pissed that Athelred unwittingly outwitted him and is bringing down hell in East Anglia, like, Canute's angry. He's taking it out on Mercia. And Edward, when he finds out about this, he, like, refuses to listen to anybody. Like, he's refusing to listen to his sister, his mother. He's even refusing to listen to Athelhelm, and is basically like, everybody shut up. I'll figure it out. Leave me alone until I do. But Mercia doesn't have that kind of time. So Edward, you know, he's proving that he's not always a super prudent ruler. So, you know, training up a successor to be different than his father is not a bad idea on Aelswith's part.
Yeah, I mean, Edward's never been Alfred. And, you know, in past seasons, I thought that was really good because there was a lot. Alfred had a lot of flaws. But
I miss him, though. I miss him on the show.
I know, because he would have made decisions and quicker decisions than Edward is doing right now. Edward is just so, he's so ready to kind of just stand back and watch. And that wasn't always Alfred. Alfred sometimes, like, stuck his neck out because he had this dream of a united England, and it feels like Edward's not as kind of committed to that dream. And so, yeah, you see where they're kind of, their paths diverge with his kind of reaction to what's happening in Mercia. I don't really want to go back to Mercia because it's just like Canute and Brita banging, and that really, like,
it's put a me off
my breakfast, and I don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
So we can just skip ahead to Bebbanburg if you want.
I mean, you know, in terms of sons being more or less like their fathers, I think he may, you know, he may disagree with his father at a religious level, but I think young Uhtred is kind of learning to be cunning like his dad. Like, we see him get in with those monks in a really smart way, and those dudes are not to be trusted, first of all. Yikes. And he also manages to get them inside the castle. Like, when they show up at Bebbanburg and are like, hey, we want to, you know, buy the heart of St. Oswald, and Aelfrich basically tells them, actually, no, bye. Young Uhtred, like, he really like thinks on his feet and manipulates Aelfrich into letting them in through just really over the top flattery that Aelfrich is completely powerless against. So yeah, without young Uhtred, those monks never would have gotten in. And, you know, like we said earlier, this is a lot of pressure to put on a young kid as, you know, part of the plan, but he pulled off what he had to do, except for the part where he did not notice the huge band of mercenaries currently residing in Bebbanburg. That slipped past his notice.
Okay, to be fair to him,
right,
they were walking one path, and the mercenaries looked to be, like,
tucked
hanging
in a corner.
Out in a little corner.
Right.
You know, like,
right,
if your observational skills aren't what they should be, you could just easily miss them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was so impressed with young Uhtred, and I saw so much of Uhtred in him when he was kind of manipulating Aelfrich. Like, that's just like an instinctual thing that he's inherited from his dad, because Uhtred has always been a smooth talker and been able to kind of outwit people.
Mm.
And he's only gotten better at it, you know, as the seasons have gone on. And so, you know, Uhtred Jr. he's up in Bebbanburg. He's coming through. He sends a signal to his dad, and it looks to be going really well. And then,
well,
of
before
course,
we get to that,
those mercenaries.
Before we get to that, I want to talk about the scene between Beoka and Uhtred.
Ooh, yeah, okay.
Where they're on the boat, where they've, like, basically, you know, they've shown up at Bebbanburg. They're back in their home. And I loved the scene. Where Uhtred, you know, because we know what's waiting for them in the castle, like, we can't be, like, fully hell yeah about everything. But I love this moment where Uhtred is like, is this the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? And Beoka is like, listen, like, this is our home. This is where we belong. You've worked so hard to get here. Like, now is your time.
We're not leading men to defeat. Fight will be furious. Men will fall. But I would not encourage you if I thought you would lose. Feel the air here, Uhtred. Feel its cold breath. This is the air that you and I were born to breathe. We're meant to be here.
And I loved having that moment between them. And I love their relationship. I love that Baoka, you know, obviously they've had their rifts in the past, but I love that they ultimately always find their way back to each other as allies and friends. And I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah. And I think, too, you know, the importance of Bevenberg and their relationship, this is where it all started. And, you know, if you think, if you think back to season one when he was just a little boy, I mean, the one constant has always been Baoka. And for him to kind of give that blessing of like, yes, like now is the time. We've done enough for everyone else. Like now is our time to kind of take back what's ours. It's really like empowering and you want to like kind of fist pump for it. But at the same time, it's kind of like, it's almost bittersweet because you know it's not going to be as easy as they think it's going to be.
Right.
And I wish it was. It's just, whatever. I guess you have to throw some things in for plot. Right. I don't know.
They have to put us through some pain so the good moments feel better. Whatever.
We're never going to get to Bevenberg.
Never.
And we've come so close.
I know.
But yeah, so they have this really sweet moment and then they get the signal from young Uhtred.
Yeah.
And it's so sad. Like to think about it now, it's so sad because like they're joking about, you know, Finn's joking about like that's the guard I want to kill. You know what I mean? Like it's just they're so optimistic and they have no idea what's waiting for them. And there were a couple of moments, you know, through that whole kind of scene where they're trying to get in because young Uhtred is caught by
Whitgar,
Aelfrich's son. I don't want to remember his name. He's Sinbad. I don't know. Who cares? He catches him, kind of brings him out to the square, kind of labels him as a spy, and they start, you know, beating up on him, trying to get him to tell them who he's working for. So he doesn't get to kind of, I guess, do everything that he needed to do. So there's like a delay. And so he's kind of dealing with this in the square, and then Uhtred and the gang are trying to get into the castle. And there were so many moments where I thought Uhtred's going to watch them, like, murder his son. You know what I mean? Like,
I
just knew he wasn't going to make it in time.
I really liked that moment where Uhtred basically had to pull an Indiana Jones under the portcullis. That was a fun little bit of action. you know, okay, I hate to bring it back to Game of Thrones, but I feel about Whitgar the same way that I felt about Euron Greyjoy. I feel like Aelfrich has been set up as this, like, the big bad for Uhtred, but actually it's not him, and now it's going to be his son who's going to show up from the sea and immediately, you know, claim that he's this big bad, but he hasn't really earned that, but we're supposed to think that about him, and it just, I don't know, the fact that, like, he's being set up as the big bad for Uhtred now felt very much like Euron Greyjoy fighting Jaime in the last season, which I don't
love.
But yeah, so
we just need him to, like, promise some elephants that don't come through. And
exactly.
There it is.
But yeah, so, like, young Uhtred's getting the shit beat out of him by Aelfrich. And I really liked this moment, though, where, I mean, like, I don't like the moments where, like, he murders the monks, even though they sucked. But, like, I love how he sort of recognizes a familiar thing in young Uhtred and he can't quite place it. And then young Uhtred is like, screw it. I'm going to tell him who I am. I'm Uhtred of Bevenberg. And Aelfrich is not pleased.
But again, such an Uhtred senior move.
Exactly.
To just be like, whatever.
Exactly. Just like his dad in that way. And yeah, so Aelfrich is going to kill him, but Uhtred gets in and sort of takes Aelfrich by the throat and is like, I'm the true Lord of Bevenberg. I'm taking it back. And I think he really assumes that everybody's going to immediately switch to his side because Aelfrich, you know, sucks so bad. But then Aiden the monk is like, actually, we've got the son of Aelfrich who is very much alive and he's the true Lord or the true heir of Bevenberg now. And, you know, things get a little dicey quite quickly.
And here's the thing. I think it's, like, so kind of crappy to be like, yeah, we're going to take this guy over Uhtred. Because everyone knows, like, Aelfrich was the worst. And They may not know that he tried to kill his nephew,
mm-hmm.
But they know that Uhtred would have been king if right. he had, you know, not been taken. And so there's, like, that kind of absence of loyalty there. But I think, too, it's, like...
I think it depends
again,
on...
in that time...
I think it depends on, like, whether or not they were around then to have that loyalty to, like, Uhtred's father.
True. It's been a while.
It's been a long time. So it depends on whether or not these are some of the same men that were around then, or if they're all just, like, new guys that Aelfrich has been taken on.
Yeah.
But, like, I think, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, life back then was really brutal. And I think unless you were one of the ruling class, you had to be pretty flexible in who you served. You know what I mean? If you're going to survive, sure. you're going to be like, all right, well, this guy is king now, or not necessarily king, but the Lord now. So I need to follow him if I'm going to be able to, like, eat. So I think I think that these guys are in an uncomfortable position, especially if they haven't heard of the previous Lord of Bebbanburg, Uhtred. Yeah, I think they have to be pretty mercenary about it. But, yeah, really does not go well for Uhtred here.
No, I think he thinks, too, one, he thinks people are going to follow him. Two, he thinks, well, I've got Aelfrich, you know, I've got a knife to his throat, like, even if they were unsure, they've got to do what I say because mm-hmm. they're not going to want to see their lord killed.
Right. Except his son doesn't give a shit.
Doesn't care.
Nope.
He thinks like, oh, yeah. No, that's not why he came. Like, he came for Bebbanburg, not for his dad.
Right.
And so, you know, he's standing up there on the, like, he's standing up in the fortress and he's like looking down on everything. He's got this like damn crossbow and he's like, I'm going to make moves for myself. And instead of killing Uhtred or Uhtred's son or whatever, he kills his dad, like, you know, straight through the eye.
Removes Uhtred's leverage.
It's a shocking moment. Yeah. And now all of a sudden, Uhtred and the guys are outnumbered and they don't have anything to bargain with.
Nope.
And yeah, it's.
It ends on such a cliffhanger. Oh my God. Just unbearable cliffhanger. So get ready to fight. It's going to be so bad.
So bloody. Okay, guys, we've got a little treat for you. We actually got to chat with Uhtred himself, Alexander Draiman, coolest guy, about season 4 and all of the action that's happened so far. So here's what he had to say when we asked him a couple of questions about what's in store.
So this season, we finally get to see Uhtred as a father, but his son is not what he expected at all, I think. So will Uhtred ever not be plagued by the Christian God in his relationships?
He will always be plagued by the Christian God. That's the point.
His paganism is his real curse. No, I think, well, it's interesting because we've seen Uhtred struggle in a lot of different relationships and, you know, his friendships, romantic relationships. Why do you think it was, you know, finally time to explore that father-son bond?
Well, because at some point we just have to see those kids that he keeps fathering all around.
Sure.
The country. It's just part of him growing up and growing older, and since he doesn't really look older, he should at least have kids that make him look older.
Yeah, lucky for you, you guys don't have to do any like prosthetics and really age. That must be nice.
I know. We really got to talk about this for next season. I don't know what's gonna happen with that. Next season he's supposed to be mid to late 50s, according to the books. You know, obviously we're veering away from that, but this season Uhtred is early 50s already, you know, according to the books.
Wow.
But obviously that's not what we're trying to portray.
Well, you know, give you some crow's feet and a little gray and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So this season, more than ever, we could really, you know, feel the bond between Uhtred and his pretty boys. How have you guys, you know, sort of developed that camaraderie on and off screen?
Well, there's so much of it off screen that we don't really need to do any work on screen in order to portray that. You know, we have become
best of
friends in life, and I miss them so much, especially at the moment watching the series and we talk a lot because there's interview stuff going on, and you know, I really miss him. And when we're on set, we spend every minute together when we're offset in Budapest. It's like going to work with your coming out to play with your best friends going to work, you know. So there's no work that we need to do in order to pretend anything.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, so I guess.
Okay, yeah. And we're back. Yeah, hopefully that shed some light. Well, I don't know, but it's cool to hear like from people that are actually in it, and they obviously know more than we do, and we're just going to keep speculating. So now it's time for our next episode wishes. This is when we issue our demands for upcoming episodes, like the spoiled toddlers that we are. Here's what we want to see, when we want to see it, and why we won't be denied. Alyssa, what do you think is going to be happening in the next couple episodes?
Honestly, like, this episode ends on what might possibly be the most brutal cliffhanger so far on the show. Mm. Our boys are seriously outnumbered, so thank God this is a Netflix show instead of a week-to-week, because I think that would have been unbearable. Just the worst, having to wait a week to see the next episode. Unacceptable.
Like, I know we're spoiled. Yeah, right. I know we're spoiled now, but, like, but I like, can't imagine, like...
Absolutely not.
We used to do that.
I know.
My anxiety would not take it.
No, for sure not. But, yeah, like, outside of our fave survival, I'm really hoping to see, like, more communication between Uhtred and his son. I think this sort of developing relationship might be my favorite part of the season so far. I love seeing their back and forth and them butting heads and also starting to understand each other more. I'm hoping to see more of that. And I'm also hoping to see someone take Edward down a peg, but I'm not sure that would happen because we're only two episodes in. So I think that'll play out over the long game. But, God, just listen to somebody else, Edward. Jeez.
And cut your hair.
Cut your hair.
I mean, maybe that's the whole, that's your problem.
Right.
Too much hair.
It didn't end well for Jim Morrison, and it won't end well for you.
Yeah, I'm a very simple woman. Mm. I just want to see the whole Cookham crew
escape
Ebenberg with their heads attached to their shoulders. I think that's too much to ask. I don't think I'm going to get my wish, but... Yeah, if I have, like, one prayer to send up to the heavens, it would be that just everyone survives and gets out of Bebbanburg. And let's just leave Bebbanburg alone. Like, it's
what's the big deal
cursed.
About Bebbanburg? Like, just,
who cares?
Man.
You know what I mean? It's up in north. It's very cold. Let's just go back down to Cookham. Right. Everything was fine when we were in Cookham.
Yeah. The Last Kingdom has a massive cast of interesting characters, and nearly everyone gets their time to shine. Our arsling of the episode is the character who truly goes above and beyond to win the war or simply win our hearts. So, Jessica, who is your arsling in this episode?
So, I'm going to give a shout-out to Uhtred Jr. Mm. I think he really, like, did a lot to, like, earn respect to this episode. He's still, like, a little, you know, pious shit who thinks he knows everything. But I think you can chalk that up to, like, being a teenager, obviously. Yeah, come on. I think, you know, he came through when his dad needed him. And there were moments when he even, like, helped the plan along. Like, there were a couple moments where this plan could have died and he could have been like, I tried, whatever. But he was able to, like, quickly think on his feet and he... kind of put himself out there to help his dad. And I think we can't, like, ignore that. And, I think he's got some Viking in him. And I couldn't be more proud of him.
Yeah, that's a really good choice. I'm going to go with Bayoka in this episode. Now that he's, you know, back where he belongs in Uhtred's crew, he's really proving why he's so valuable. You know, he may not be a warrior, but he's really there as, like, the heart of the group. You know, he admonishes young Uhtred to be patient with his dad. and gives, you know, Uhtred the encouragement that he needs to take back Bebbanburg, even if it might be a huge mistake, but that is beyond their control at this point. You know, Beoka is a guy that you want at your side. And, you know, he proved he proved in this episode that he really has been one of, you know, Uhtred's best and most steadfast allies over three seasons. So Beoka's my
He's
one.
He's a real ride or die.
Yeah, he is. He is. He is the epitome of a ride or die. So my arsling is Beoka this
episode.
Just
want him to, like, keep writing and not die.
Yeah.
Like, keep the writing going.
Right.
Get ready to shame none the worst character of the episode with us. It doesn't matter if you're a Saxon or a Dane. Anyone can be a turd, and we're calling out the biggest one of the week. So, Alyssa, you get to go first.
Honestly, screw those monks. I hated them. They were, like, off-getting, you know, hypocritically giving their, you know, leaving. Ugh. Anyway, they had their fun in the whorehouse. Then they were, you know, ready to ignore young Uhtred when they thought he was a beggar, despite, you know, preaching the good word. And then, you know, threatening to sell them into sexual slavery to pay their bills. And I hated them. Like, sure, they were only there for the episode, rest in pieces. But they really proved that they truly sucked in a really short time. So, yeah. Bye.
I mean, like, to be fair, there's only a couple monks on this whole show that I've really liked.
I think it's just Beoka and Pyrrhic. That's it.
Yeah. Those are the two. Anyone else, all the other monks can just go die. But yeah, these guys were the worst.
Yeah.
For me, I think it's got to be Edward. Mm. I don't, what are you doing, boo? Like, where's your mind at? Because, you know, obviously there's some sense to his plan not to kind of rush to Mercia's defense because Canute would have the higher ground. And maybe he's been paying attention to Uhtred and his tutelage when it comes to hills.
Mm.
But I think, like, the more we focus on Edward, the more I just see, like, how unsure he is in this leadership role.
Yeah.
Even though he's been raised for it and he's obviously been king for a little bit. I mean, he's got a son that looks to be, like, I don't know, 4 or 5. I don't know.
I don't know how to tell kids' ages. He could be 8. He could be 3. I don't know.
He's 16. I don't know. But yeah, he's got everyone, like, coming at him, and he's choosing to trust, you know, the wrong people's advice. Mm. And I think add to that, like, his kind of casual apathy to the death of innocent Mercians. It's just really troubling.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously Edward is going through something. But I don't have time to feel for him right now. Like, you're a king. Buck up and do your job. Or let your sister do it.
Or let your sister do it. Yeah, I agree.
Because she should have been king all along.
Mm. No character is safe on the Last Kingdom, but some seem to be flirting with death more than others. Ninth century life was fleeting and barbaric, but that doesn't mean we can't have some fun with it. Get ready to place your bets on who's headed for Valhalla soon, because this is the Viking Death Pool. Jessica, who is, you know, flirting pretty close to RIP for you right now?
Who's not?
Yeah,
seriously.
Fair.
I think things are, like, not going well in Bebbanburg. And, like, I'm happy that we were wrong about Aelfrich not dying soon enough this season.
Mm.
But, you know, when the Last Kingdom giveth, the Last Kingdom taketh away.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We were given, I think we're given one death we've really been wanting and hoping for, and now I think we're going to, you know, there's got to be one that we're dreading that's on the way.
Mm.
Personally, I'm worried for Ethelfled's safety. Obviously, I'm still worried about Beoka, but I think this kind of interaction with Ethelred and Edith and the fact that she's, you know, going to put herself in harm's way to protect Mercia, it's just, it's not good all around. So I hope Ethelfled's on her guard. And I love Eldhelm.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's the best, like, bodyguard.
Mm.
I don't know how much he could really do to protect her. Like, I think Uhtred needs to get back pretty quick.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Uhtred and crew, they're heading into Bebbanburg extremely unprepared. So it's going to be bad. We're going to suffer losses. But on a different note, I'm really interested to see how things play out with Canute and Breda, honestly. Like, Heston let Canute know, like, hey, I know that you're responsible for Ragnar's death. And Breda doesn't know that, but she'll probably be pissed if she finds out. So I'm hoping for a knife in the throat eventually for Canute. But we'll see. We'll see how things go for him when she eventually gets that information, because like they've talked about it enough that she's for sure going to find out at some point. And I think that'll be really bad for her current transactional relationship.
Okay, guys, now this is clearly a very serious podcast about a very serious show, but sometimes it's nice to indulge in a little thirst. It's 2020, the world is on fire. Honestly, we deserve this. So this is our time to celebrate the thirstiest moments that really blew our skirts up this episode. Alyssa?
Basically, all sexual contact in this episode was negatively hot. Absolutely not. I declare this episode not thirsty. Capital N, capital Ooh. T. Like, we had it too good after last week's, like, romance novel hookup between Uhtred and Athelflaed, and now we must pay the price. And that is for a
totally
extremely unsexy episode.
You are not wrong. I was grasping at straws to find something like worth talking about thirst-wise. It sure as hell ain't that hookup between Breeda and Canute.
Just upsetting.
I think it's so upsetting. I guess like I could make a case and like not to be like, you know, pervy because he is like a teen. But I could make a case for Uhtred Jr. because, you know, he's young and he's got like a god awful haircut. But he's throwing off some major Timothée Chalamet vibes.
I can see that.
You know how I feel about our Timmy. And, yeah, that curly mop, the always on the brink of tears expression. It just
the
makes me want to, like, go call. Yeah, the cheekbones. It makes me want to go watch Call Me By Your Name and eat a peach.
Oh, man.
You've got to get the thirst where you can.
Yeah. Since we recorded our previous seasons, the world has changed a little bit. Life has ground to a halt, and we're just doing our best not to lose our minds in quarantine. So goodbye, Geek Out, and welcome to Self-Care Corner, where we talk about what we're reading, watching, and doing to stave off the seemingly endless alone time. Jessica, what are you doing to cope right now?
Okay, so this is, if you know me, you know, I'm a city girl. I don't like the outdoors. I don't trust nature. But I'm gardening.
Yeah.
I'm learning to cross stitch.
Love it.
I'm watching these YouTube videos of like these indigenous like builders who build underground pools with like primitive tools.
I'm going to need a link to that. That sounds extremely cool.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like ASMR. But YouTube style. Mm. And, you know, next I'll probably be like churning my own butter. Like I'm turning into a Little House on the Prairie character.
I love it.
And honestly, it's like, it's such a stress-free life. Mm. Like I get why people want to return to like simpler times without like technology and everything, because it's just, yeah, I don't feel the need to like constantly be on and constantly be doing something.
Yeah.
So I guess in a way, like this quarantine has been pretty good. And if I can like get a tomato out of my tomato plant, like watch the fuck out, world. I'm coming.
Yeah, I have a plot in my local community garden, but I haven't been able to get out there yet. So I will be joining you in the gardening world soon.
I'm so excited. We'll have to like share what we're growing.
Yes. Perfect. So I ended up leaving for a while, like 7 weeks I was away from home, and I have a lot of houseplants. And I was extremely worried that they were all going to die, but most of them made it. So I've had my own plant babies to tend with. But mostly I've just become an absolute douchebag about coffee. Like I've always had that tendency because like I worked in an independent coffee shop in high school. But like I bought a Chemex. I've been doing pour overs in the morning. I made that Dalgona coffee, like the whipped coffee that's been going around Instagram.
How was that?
It's incredible. It's really easy. It's just like 2 tablespoons of, instant coffee granules, which I don't normally have on hand because it's instant coffee, but I got some, and it's 2 tablespoons of that, 2 tablespoons of sugar, and 2 tablespoons of boiling water. And then you just like whip the absolute shit out of it with your stand mixer or a hand mixer if you have one. And then you pour, like, it basically makes, like, this really creamy, beautiful, like, kind of between, like, a foam and a pudding. And you pour it over, like, a cup of, like, a little bit of milk and ice, and then you blend it together. And it is so good. Highly recommend it. And it's Instagrammable, which I know is such a shitty thing to say, but, like, it looks cool on your Instagram, and it's delicious. So why not try it? What else are you going to do right now?
I'm totally doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
All right, guys, if you want to hear more of our bullshitting, check us out on Twitter or over at Sci-Fi Wire Fangirls. Also, don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave us a nice review wherever you get your podcast.
And until next time, destiny is all, bitches.